You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Sophia Smallstorm. Sophia, thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Dave.
Sophia, you did a PowerPoint presentation recorded in front of a live audience at ConspiracyCon in early June 2013 entitled Unraveling Sandy Hook in 2, 3, 4, and 5 Dimensions. I want to get into that in great detail in a moment, but before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are?
Yeah, I came into alternative research by way of 9/11, and then I moved into the chemtrails arena because I was noticing them, and I've given talks and made a documentary. One was a full documentary, 9/11 Mysteries, and the other one have been shorter talks and presentations, mostly due to invitations extended to me to come to a conference and speak. So the better known of the talks on chemtrails is From Chemtrails to Pseudo-Life, Part 1, subtitled The Dark Agenda of Synthetic Biology, and that is on YouTube in its entirety on YouTube as well as in fragments. Many people have taken bits and pieces of it and reposted those. And then the second talk, which is actually kind of more startling than the first, has not gotten the same attention, unfortunately, but that is called From Chemtrails to Pseudo-Life, Part 2, and the subtitle is Living in the Manhattan Project. It's very interesting. I recommend that everybody make some effort to watch that talk because we are in the Manhattan Project right now. It never was shut down. It is an ongoing thing. So the third talk that I gave that seems to have gone viral faster than the other two is this Unraveling Sandy Hook. And I was invited to speak at ConspiracyCon about Sandy Hook, which was kind of a surprise because I hadn't really done formal posting on it to any great extent. But I was on to something that other people hadn't managed to discover about Sandy Hook and similar events. So that is really the crux of this PowerPoint that I gave. That is the relationship also to, you could call it, the Manhattan Project and the wireless world, the smart grid. That's really what this talk was about.
That was out in California, right? The ConCon?
Yes.
Very interesting. I have to watch those videos. I've watched, obviously, Unraveling Sandy Hook in its entirety, 1 hour, 32 minutes, and 12 seconds, but the other ones I have to watch. Prior to the interview, you summed it up that what happened at Sandy Hook was some kind of an exercise, right?
Most likely, Dave, because when you try comparing the reported facts to the real world, the world of physics, even the world of perception, there are too many things wrong. And the only explanation left for all of those anomalies, not just dozens, but hundreds, the very peculiar percipient witness testimony, the very strange, even the experts reporting on what they did, like the coroner. And this is not a local coroner, as some people have mistakenly assumed, H. Wayne Carver. He's the chief medical examiner of the state of Connecticut. So very high-level officials gave very poor accounts of what they were supposed to have done. And by poor, I mean extremely weak, vague, lacking in particulars that you would have had this been a massacre as the news described. So you have to then start thinking outside of the box. And it was through some research I had been doing with another very amazing woman on the wireless world and radiation. This is an extension of radiation biology, which is what that second talk that I mentioned to you, Living in the Manhattan Project, was about. And this other woman, her name is Jenny Lake, she discovered that the Department of Homeland Security conducted what were called capstone events, and this was part of the Integrated Public Alert and Warning System, the IPAWS program. And when she shared that with me, it just hit me like a ton of bricks, and I started applying all of that to Sandy Hook, and then Sandy Hook began to make sense.
Who was running the exercise? What agency?
It's the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, the FEMA exercise. But they are called capstone events, integrated capstone events, and I explain this in the presentation. And there are some people who have told me they've watched the Sandy Hook presentation that I gave several times, and I think it's good to watch that more than once because you will have a better thinking in of the information and it'll start organizing itself in your head. There's so much information in these talks, And there's outtakes on the PowerPoint slide, and then there are things that I'm saying. But this is a very layered and very complex design that we're talking about, these kinds of capstone events. So you have to put your effort and energy into understanding them through the lenses that I give you. I titled the talk Unraveling Sandy Hook in 2, 3, 4, and 5 Dimensions. And I use one of my own sort of constructs of dimensions. I refer to the two-dimensional world as the flat world of television and printed media. And the things we got from that two-dimensional world did not make sense in the normal world of three dimensions, you know, where the laws of physics apply. And then there's the fourth dimension, which is your own perception of something as you hear about it or as it goes down. And when your perception tells you something, it doesn't work. And the laws of physics of the third dimension tell you that doesn't work. Or the protocols of the real world are not being met or adhered to when you are listening to the second dimensional report. You have to say something's wrong here. And in Sandy Hook, it was wrong hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. So it doesn't work in reality as we know it. So it was something else.
Mm-hmm.
You see, when I had to give this talk at ConspiracyCon, I was giving it to a sophisticated audience. Most people in the audience already knew something about the anomalies of Sandy Hook and were suspicious of it. So I had to tailor a talk that would take them to another level. And I also had to do more than what was being done in the research on the internet, because I wanted to really lift the understanding as high as I could. So my Sandy Hook presentation is built around this concept of dimensions, just so we can discuss all of these false flags, if you want to call them hoaxes, deceptions, with a new kind of language, if that is people's preference. And for a while there, in the wake of the talk, I was getting a lot of feedback using my own dimensional examples and language and references. And, you know, as things go, that has kind of died down. But the feedback on YouTube, once it was posted, which was back on November 5th, and it's had, I don't know, it quite reached 150,000 views, but it was 140,000 something.
Yeah, right now it's 146,000, and, well, it was 76, now it's 84. So it's growing as we speak.
Yeah, and there's another person who's posted it in its entirety, so that one had 11,000 when I was last there. But anyway, it's getting some
traction,
and I'm glad of that. And many of the comments reflect this interest in the dimension terminology, but that was just another tool that I brought to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very important because everything, I think, should be questioned and examined. Okay, Sophia, so if this was a DHS or a FEMA exercise, can you let the listeners know about some of the major aspects of the exercise? How do they pull these things off?
First of all, I'm going to go right to Jenny Lake's blog, and I want people to go there if they want to learn more about many things. JenniferLake.wordpress.com. Integrated capstone event. And this is from emsworld.com. You'll see the link there. It's called an ICE. And the definition in this article titled FEMA's Integrated Capstone Event Expands Training for Responders. You see, these are training exercises. And they're ongoing in that, I have to say this now and I want you to really think about it. We too are being trained. Means are being introduced by way of these exercises and the news reports that follow them. And the modeling. This is very important. Modeling is delivered through the participants, the survivors, the witnesses, the television anchors. And we are being shown how to behave in the wake of a tragedy, personal or otherwise. You will see on the news when there is a torrential flood somewhere in the country, and I hope your listeners are aware that much of our weather is engineered. So these man-made floods created by torrential rains, created by diverting atmospheric moisture, concentrating it, destabilizing it, and then dumping it on a region. And people's houses are washed away, along with their cars. They barely survive the event. This is a dramatic loss of property. You could say a loss of wealth. It's also called population dislocation. I'm laughing because this, it's mind-blowing. And they stand there in front of the television camera and they say, it's all good. I'm here. I got my dog. I got my wife. And we can start again. You see, and that's what America is being treated to. Catastrophe over and over and over, and instead of reacting naturally to it, you're being shown how to accept it. That's the new form of courage. Just take it and keep going. And for these catastrophes that involve loss of life, children being taken from parents by a madman, a shooter, who broke into a school, etc., etc., this is all the willingness to forgive and so forth is being modeled for us on television. And that is societal training. So training for responders in this article title is not just first responders, the uniform-wearing elements of our world, but it's for us too. We are responding. These are social training programs. So the integrated capstone event is integrating multiple courses into a combined event because it replicates what will happen in an actual community. So these are rehearsals. They are actually programming techniques.
How do they actually pull them off?
The way that they could have created this. Now, you are asking me as though I should know, as though I'm part of FEMA, right? I'm going to read to you from Jenny Lake's blog. The IPAWS, which stands for Integrated Public Alert and Warning System. Now, I want you to think about what that means. Integrated Public Alert and Warning System. That includes robocalls. It includes notifications by media. It includes notifications to media. This is a network. And much of that network, all of it, the planned formation of it, is wireless. This is not through the old-fashioned phone line. They want us to sign up to the smart 911 system, whereby all of our personal information is collected, along with personal information, contact information for those in our immediate circle, family, friends, children, etc. So when something happens in the community, the smart 911 system alerts everyone on their cell phones. This is what happened in Sandy Hook. So I'm going to read from Jenny Lake's blog. The IPAWS mass notification system required national technical compliance enforced through the FCC by June of 2012. In August 2012, it began testing its geo-targeting capabilities in a program called Reaching the Whole Community. Newtown Sandy Hook prepared for its role in future drilling by hosting Homeland Security Training, HSEEP, at the Riverside Road Firehouse on September 22nd. This is a quote, "This blended approach will give participants hands-on experience that readily translates to real-world exercise skills. Activities include creating exercise documentation, conducting exercise planning conferences and briefings, and practicing exercise evaluation. Additionally, the HSEEP training course will briefly cover other DHS initiatives." So no one in authority, no one in government, no one in media is claiming or stating that the Sandy Hook shooting was a capstone event, but it bears the requisite details of just such an expansive drill, including the known priorities of the DOD and DHS.
Mm-hmm. This Jennifer Lake, it seems like she doesn't really post anymore, right? Unless I'm looking at the wrong thing. October 28, 2013, are there any newer entries, would you know? Or
she has taken a break to do more research and more organization and preparation. She has another blog, polioforever.wordpress.com, which is also about radiation biology. But that's where her research into polio took her. It took her into the world of nuclear testing and bomb making, and then it took her into the wireless world. That is another expansion of radiation biology.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that was something that I wanted to ask you about, radiation biology. Can you give a definition of that, exactly what that is?
Well, it's a term that we are using for the study of and development of methods of inducing radiation, experimenting with it, and observing its effects on the population at large. So when Marie Curie discovered radium back in the 1800s, that's when this was all born. And back in the 1800s, everybody played with radioactive materials. Everybody had X-ray machines. Electricians had them. People were irradiating other people for the common cold, the headache, for 30 minutes at a time. And these people began to die and have limbs amputated. The subjects of such experiments, many of whom were the assistants of the principals and scientists who manned this research. And it progressed into development of the atomic bomb, and that was, you could call it, the ostensible goal of the Manhattan Project. And many people believe that the Manhattan Project was shut down after the 1940s and 50s, but it wasn't. It went on. It went on. It had a medical division that was enormous, that has generated many of our universities, such as the UC University chain, University of California, many of our research facilities, such as Salk Institute, Sloan Kettering in New York, our research hospitals, research universities and facilities, and defense. Many of the defense centers, Los Alamos, all of these kinds of organizations and institutions, they're all part of Manhattan Project. And Manhattan Project has expanded now into wireless radiation. And Newtown was an experiment in wireless integration and alert, as we see it.
So there's a possibility that the entire event was done on a stage and nobody died.
Well, when you have a media that is this advanced, when you have the kind of information dissemination that you have, video techniques, and willing compliance by key people in media who are very, very high up, I'm talking about the big name anchors, you don't have to create catastrophe on the human level. You can create it in the 2D world, the fictional level. When I conceive of how a capstone event might be arranged, you have a pyramid of teams. If you remember your study of the pyramid that's on our dollar bill, for instance, the all-seeing eye is at the very top. That's actually the capstone of any pyramid, that top triangular piece. And then in these events, you've got layers of teams underneath, going all the way down to the public. And in the midsection, you might have, for instance, state police or local police, highway patrol, you'll have hospitals, you'll have the doctors in the hospitals, the hospital responders, the EMTs, the ambulances, and within each layer is pyramidic as well. So you'll have people who are in the know that this is an exercise at the very top of those teams, but then everybody else will be responding to training. So that's the integrated capstone event. It's an incorporation of many different teams, each with its own knowing and unknowing participants, and they're all responding to training and to events that occur in the exercise. And they're using their best judgment, they're using their professional skills, and all this is being observed. And the thing is ongoing. The way that we are responding to Sandy Hook today, in the form of these accepted beliefs, or you could call them memes, is part of the observation platform. They are looking at us. They are watching the way that we're blogging and we're talking and the interviews we're giving. And they're watching the public's willingness, for instance, to submit to increased mental health evaluations as a part of gun control or qualification to do this or that. The schools are changing. The whole nature of school patrol from inside is changing. They have something called now school resource officers who combine training in psychology and law enforcement. And they are going to be incorporated into schools as staff. And they will watch for bullying and be on site in case there are any shootings, et cetera, et cetera. So the tightening of our society is a response to Sandy Hook. So Sandy Hook didn't end. It's still ongoing, and we are being observed.
Mm-hmm. What's the upshot of it all? I mean, they want to simply monitor the public reaction to these type of events and then go from there?
Each time you have an event, you will have a reaction and then a solution will be proposed. So Sandy Hook, a mass murderer, gets into a school. There are so many angles to this that I'm just going to talk about the gun control angle. So the reaction from the public is, oh my God, look, his mother took him to shooting ranges and she gave him guns and he was an autistic child. He had his own mental issues. So we need to restrict guns, particularly semi-automatic weapons and this kind of thing. And then that itself creates a huge reaction of pushback. And what the American public then agrees to is the mental health tightening, the checks, the evaluations. There's now going to be a new explosion of experts who are qualified and trained to intrude on our lives on a regular basis to evaluate us for fitness, mental health fitness. They call it behavioral fitness. This is all new. So gun control seems to be, at first, the reason something may be engineered, but ultimately it isn't. This is the typical spectrum play. One thing on one end, it's opposite on the other end, and then a compromise that's arrived at, which in turn goes to the extreme side of the spectrum as a problem. So it's the problem, then the reaction, then the compromise that's offered. And this is how you move society along into controlled change.
So if someone wanted to get more information about this, really beef up on it, where would they go for that?
Well, I mean, watch my presentation again, and then start looking into things like Hegelian dialectic as a form of controlled societal change. Look into social engineering. Start reading Edward Bernays. You're going directly to the source now. Go to the DHS website. Read its own descriptions of its capstone events. Google all of this. Once something clicks in your mind, then you get on the internet. That's why we still have the internet. We can research. We can,
for now,
you know, go back and even read books about some of this stuff. There are plenty of people who have written on social engineering. Study the changes in the school shootings from Columbine to now. There was the Dunblane in Australia. There was Virginia Tech. Start looking at all those events because there's been a progression. They're not all pulled off the same way. There are changes. There are modifications. You have a public that's increasingly willing to accept things on face value. They don't go anywhere beyond what they're told, what other people tell them. They become frightened. I mean, this is the sheeple, and they don't question anything. We have been reduced now to human beings operating on the lowest chakras, if you want to bring in another kind of language here. And we don't use our higher faculties. We don't use our perception. Our perception is shot. It's gone. It's finished. As long as somebody smiles and tells you it's all good, you believe it's all good. So we don't have a discerning public, and they can be told anything, and they can be herded into any new trend, and they are more easily trained than mice.
No, I agree with you 100%. I'm just wondering how it was that this happened so effectively and quickly.
It didn't happen quickly. It happened over generations. It happened through television. It happened through movies. They gave us films with superstars, people who were bigger than life. And I give an example of this in my presentation. When you are in the theater and you are watching somebody on the screen and you can see their nose hairs, that is a much larger than life experience than anything. You don't ever get a person that's that gigantic in front of you. And imagine how that influences you, the emotions they have, the things they say. These are all programming techniques. Now they've made televisions gigantic. Televisions are, you know, 5 feet. Diagonal measurement, they might be bigger.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't watch TV,
so,
but yeah.
All of this is a very effective way to impress on, you could call it the subconscious mind, but on that trainable being, the trends, the memes, the beliefs, the material that is being prepared for us. And people go into a neighborhood, walk around in the evening, and watch all the flickering coming from the windows. Everybody wants a TV in their room, and now you can watch TV on your iPad, and you can take it everywhere with you. But it's not even just from TV. It's from the way the behaviors people pick up, and then they model to each other. And one of them is the belief that things happened in Newtown. I mean, I was personally thrown out of a research group here because the person who was leading it grew up in Fairfield, Connecticut. And she told me it happened. I know people who live there. And so it happened. What happened? Something happened. Yeah. And I said, we don't know what happened. That wasn't acceptable.
Wow.
Well, once you start looking at the actual facts that we were given, and you compare them to the protocols that are put in place. And Wolfgang Halbig, whom you interviewed, is a very good deliverer of these kinds of comparisons that don't match and they don't add up. He has a unique background. He comes from school administration, school safety consultant. That's what he is right now. He trains people in school safety. He travels all over the country, and he was in law enforcement. He was a Florida state trooper. He was a homicide investigator. He is thoroughly, thoroughly trained in all this stuff. And yet, to our knowledge, he's the only person who's come forward and demanded this information who has these overlapping credentials, right? There are law enforcement people who've come forward here and there. There's a guy on YouTube, Come and Get Him 1776 is his channel. And there's another guy who I have spoken with who is in law enforcement in Connecticut, and he works for a firearms company, and he sees all the way through this thing. And I've talked to people who are in the firearms training occupation who see through this thing. But people who don't have that kind of skill or background or don't have guns or know anything about them, they can't see through it.
Is there anything else that you'd like to bring up for listeners who might be interested in actually digging in a little deeper into this topic?
Well, I think that the article by Jim Fetzer, he was the principal editor of the article, although other people contributed to its writing. That article, if you take those top 10 reasons, and there could be 10 more and 10 more and 10 more, and, you know, somebody I know proposes that we do another top 10 and another one. And you can write about this forever, but ultimately you have to start going into each of those areas because it's like a pyramid itself, and looking at the content of that argument and then drilling down and down and down. Because remember, this has taken years and years to develop. Where we are today in the world is so different from where we were 100 years ago. If you want to start studying how we got here, you have to look into history itself and the nature of news reporting and the kinds of events that have been thrown at us. 9/11 was huge, and it altered the perception and the belief system of many, many Americans, and it put a tremendous amount of fear into them, fear of the other, the terrorist. Now you have fear of our own family members. This is the new gear that we have gone into. Reason to fear our own loved ones.
Yeah. Sophia Smallstorm, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. It's really interesting stuff. I'm glad you're digging into it, and I'm glad you're sharing it with everybody, and I'm looking forward to talking to you in the future.
Sure, no problem. Thank you, Dave. That was very nice of you to invite me.